evening and welcome to This Week in Football from the makers of Low Limit Football on the All In Sports Talk Network. I'm your host, Joe Uccello, and tonight we bring you Russia, the host nation for the 2018 World Cup. Joining me, as always, is my co-host, Mr. Roberto Rojas, and as well, Mr. Andrew Flint, award-winning writer from These Football Times. Gentlemen, thanks for joining me tonight. I just want to jump in quickly, Andrew, and talk about Russia itself. What makes you, I guess, an expert on Russian football? Or if you could tell the listeners, what makes you an expert? Because Rob and I certainly know.
Well, I mean, first and foremost, I live in Russia. I've lived there for nearly 8 years now. And I feel like I've done my time because I've watched quite a lot of low-tier Russian football. My local side, FC Tumen, played when I arrived in the third tier of Russian football. And believe me, it's not pretty stuff at times. And then I've watched them in the second tier. I have a season press pass at the Gyolog Stadium. And then I go to Ural Yekaterinburg. I drive 300 kilometres there, 300 kilometres back for home games for Premier League football. And I get accreditation for Russian international games. And I fly to Moscow for Champions League games. And it's a fascinating brand of football. And there's a hell of a lot that goes on behind the scenes that is either unknown or slightly unsavory, shall we say. And we've seen, of course, all of the fallout from the Olympic doping investigation, and that is threatening to drag football into it. A lot of names have been mentioned, so it's certainly not clean cut. But by the time I spent here, the players, the managers, the journalists I've got to know, I've got an interesting insight, I think, into the football over here. And I'm, yeah, delighted to come on, guys, and discuss Russia and their prospects for the World Cup.
Now, certainly catching the lower divisions of Russian football, especially over the last 8 years, you've probably seen many of these players today that are going to be featured on the national team develop as they've come through the Russian system, correct?
Well, yes. I mean, it's actually quite a lot of positivity around the national team for the first time in quite a while. And one of the main problems with youth development in Russia is that the big clubs, the Zenit St. Petersburg, Spartak Moscow, CSKA Moscow, you know, they can afford to develop players, and a large proportion of their squads certainly have been very recently, if not still are made up of their academy graduates. Now, in terms of coming through the league system, there could be more that come from the lower leagues that get up to the Premier League. There's not enough of that, in my view, because I'll give you an example. My local side, Tumen, they're struggling in the second tier, but their two fullbacks are two teenagers, one of whom, Pavel Maslov, who broke the record for the youngest ever player to play a professional game in Russia. And they're both starters for the Russian under-21 national team, and they will almost without question move on to a top club soon. More of that could happen, I guess, but the youth development is slowly turning a corner. I think a lot of people will be pleasantly surprised when they see the Russian team play at the World Cup. You know, there are plenty of players to look out for, and I'm sure we'll come on to the players more specifically soon. But it's slowly improving.
I just want to jump in here and talk about now the history of the Russian team, and even beforehand when they were the Soviet Union. Obviously, looking at history back then, the Soviet Union were a dominant side, not just in football in general, but in all sports. When you look in the World Cup, they've made the quarterfinals three times. They made it to a second group stage, a round of 16, and they ended up finishing fourth in 1966. Then after the breakup of the Soviet Union, which basically resembled into a modern independent Russia team, you know, they qualified for three World Cups, but they have been exceptionally poor in those three World Cups, you know, not even getting out of the group stage of 1994, 2002, and most recently in 2014. Andrew, it's my first question. I mean, you know, is there a reason perhaps that this Russian team, obviously being historically that dominant side back then when it was the Soviet Union, have not been able to find their pace recently? Is there a reason to that?
Well, I mean, Rob, to be honest, there are two main reasons I would highlight. One, as you rightly point out, the Soviet Union was a very, very dominant sporting nation. But the reason for that, well, one of the reasons for that is firstly, the number of nations that made up the Soviet Union. Mm. You know, you got to think back to the Central Asian republics, the Caucasus nations. Georgia, for example, has always provided plenty of really entertaining, talented, creative players. And it almost seems a bit unfair that one nation could pick up on the best of Ukrainian, of Georgian, of the Baltic states, of Armenian talents, you know, and Russia, of course, themselves. So when they became separate nations after the Soviet Union broke down, suddenly they've lost a huge portion of the talent pool. So that was one main reason. You know, and USA 94, of course, they didn't perform at all. The only thing of note, of course, was Oleg Salyenko, who scored 5 goals, I think it was, in the third, fourth place playoff and became joint top scorer in the tournament. But, you know, the other reason why I would suggest is after the breakup of the Soviet Union, you were still left with the Soviet structure of sports societies. You know, they were very centrally orientated, and there were a few very, very strong sides from each of the nations. You know, Dynamo Tbilisi, for example, they were one of the strongest sides in the Soviet higher league. And then when you leave it just to, you know, Spartak Moscow were left as the dominant side. And a large part of that was because after the Soviet Union broke up and you've got all these sports societies, they were suddenly left with a very limited talent pool. But Spartak Moscow themselves, they just simply had the lure, the attraction. They were the people's team. They are the people's team, by far the most popular. They were seen as anti-establishment, and you know they were able to attract the best youngsters, and it left everybody else with very little. And I think it affected the national team because it meant there was little competition between, you know, Spartak Moscow won 9 out of 10 titles in the 90s. So, a lot of other teams, there wasn't any motivation for them almost. And there's a big disconnection between the players and the fans, and that's not helped either. So really, this time I'm expecting a lot better, but it's not difficult to do much better than previous World Cups for Russia.
I just want to jump in here quickly, Andrew, and kind of fast forward to the tournament at hand. We did see them host the Confederations Cup last year, where they finished third in their group with Portugal, Mexico, New Zealand. What are we expecting differently in a group where they're going to open the tournament on the 14th against Saudi Arabia, but they also have some very difficult matches in front of them with Egypt and Uruguay? What can we expect possibly different in this particular World Cup full tournament as opposed to the dress rehearsal we saw last year?
Well, the Confederations Cup was a relatively poor performance from Russia. I was disappointed, but you've also got to bear in mind that you know the teams in the Confederations Cup were very, very strong. New Zealand, of course, won the first game 2-0, but even that game, it wasn't as clear cut as you would hope it would be. So, in a way, I wasn't overly disappointed in a sense, because it's a dress rehearsal and the other teams are very strong. The World Cup, though, this summer, what I'd say is different is simply a bit of time. Stanislav Cherchesov has had another 12 months to mould the squad in his image, and he's done a very good job of that. He's cleared out a lot of the deadwood. He's got rid of some of the established senior players who perhaps were becoming complacent, and he's blooding a lot of young players in. And like I say, there are some exceptionally talented players, a lot of whom will be looking for a move abroad this summer, and therefore they will use the World Cup as a springboard. So the squad is newer, is fresher, is slowly coming together, is starting to get a bit of identity. Cherchesov is earning more respect as a coach, and of course the fact that it is the biggest stage of all will provide that added automatic motivation for them. So I'm genuinely much more positive for them than I was for the Confederations Cup.
That's funny. You took one of my questions, because I was going to ask what kind of changes Cherchesov was going to make compared to the Confederations Cup team. But I do have a question in terms of the hosting by the nation. We've got 12 arenas in 11 cities. I know last year when we did a Confederations Cup preview with you, We were concerned about the nation's readiness to host the tournament, and obviously, dress rehearsal is a much smaller version of the full blown tournament. Where do we stand now? Are we set with the arenas? Are we set with transportation and hotels and that sort of thing? Or are we still ironing out a few kinks before the tournament kicks off on the 14th?
Well, we're certainly getting much closer, and I do actually genuinely, without meaning to be slightly biased, I do genuinely feel like the country will be definitely ready in time. The stadia, the most important part, I guess, in one sense, they actually are progressing very well, and most of them, in fact, all of them will have their first official test events, if they haven't already had them, in a couple of months' time in March when the domestic season restarts. So hopefully I'll get along to a few of those. I want to see some of the ones in the slightly more easternmost venues. And they're actually progressing reasonably well, and they are looking very sustainable. We mentioned last time on that pod, you mentioned we did a few months ago, that a lot of them are actually designed to be reduced in size quite significantly after the World Cup, which I'm delighted about because it means the sustainability will be there. The trains they're in excellent condition. They really are. I generally feel the best trains I've travelled on in whichever countries I've been in, and especially in the European part of Russia, which is where most fans will be based. You know, there'll be high-speed rail links between Nizhny Novgorod and Moscow. Moscow and St. Petersburg is just spectacular. 3 hours. High-speed train, really, really top-class stuff. Hotels, well, there are all range of hotel options, really. In Moscow, I've stayed in quite a few different ones, and there are plenty of low-cost hostels, which are very, very well-kept, well-located. So I actually genuinely think, logistically, that Russia is preparing fairly well, and security is exceptionally strong and always has been. So I'm feeling fairly confident on that front, to be honest, Joe.
Andrew, I just want to jump in real quick and look at the entire event as a whole and the perception that the public in Russia are getting. Obviously, there have been controversies ever since they were awarded the World Cup about 8 years ago. There have been controversy about racism and discrimination against LGBT people, you know, conflict in Ukraine and other types of corruption happening in the sport and in the country in general. But, you know, I just want to know, you know, what is the vibe over there in Russia? Obviously, I think this is probably the biggest event that they're going to host to a world in the summer since the 1980 Olympics in the Soviet Union. So, you know, what is the perception of the Russian public? You know, how are they feeling that they are going to indeed open to the world and host a World Cup?
Well, it's building. I wouldn't say it's quite the theatrical intensity of the Brazil World Cup 4 years ago, but that's slightly more to do with the culture and the people. You know, Brazil is a country that flourishes on carnivals and huge expressions of colourful celebration, and you know the Russian people have more than just football in their sporting interests. Hockey is a very, very big sport out here. So, I mean, it's not going to be the same kind of football fever, but I think what is most interesting is more on a social aspect, on a slightly broader scale. Russians are absolutely fascinated with what other people think of them. And I'm not talking about the politicians here. I'm talking about the Russian people. They always want to know what foreign people think of them. And, I mean, a World Cup is, without question, the biggest stage of all. And I think the social impact of having so many foreigners in the country is going to be, well, it's going to be very different. That's going to be the first point. And people are excited about it. The legacy of quite a number of years of underachievement as a national team has probably slightly tempered a lot of the excitement, because a lot of people, well, most people, just don't expect Russia to get very far. But I think the closer we get to it, like any country, it will be absolute bedlam by the time the World Cup begins. So I feel so privileged to be on the ground here in time for it.
Now, Andrew, I want to jump in quickly and start looking at some of the players that Cherchesov is going to have to look at. When we talked last year for the Confederations Cup, the Russian team was going to be without their top scorer for Euro 2016 qualifying in Artem Dzyuba, who was injured. at the time. But in 22 caps, he scored 11 goals in his career. He's 29 years old. And we saw that, for the most part, Fedor Smolov was the player that took over for him around the same age at 27 years old. My understanding is that at this point, Zuba is healthy. But when we look at his team, which is Zenit St. Petersburg, and the scoring for Zenit St. Petersburg, I believe, and I'm just going to check quickly here to have my numbers correct. He's had 15 matches, only scored one goal, and really the goal scoring has been handled by Alexander Kokorin, who's scored 10 goals in 20 matches for Zenit. Is this the kind of thing where Cherchesov decides maybe not to bring Zuba to this tournament and maybe stick with Corcoran, who's much more in form, and maybe Smolov, who we leaned on last year for the Confederations Cup?
Well, Joe, to be honest with you, I think Zuba is looking very doubtful to make the squad, which, you know, 12 months ago, 18 months ago, you wouldn't have considered that as a possibility. He can't get in the Zenit side. He had a run of games in the side in about October, November, which coincided with Zenit's dreadful drop in form. But Zenit have also just signed Anton Zabolotny from Tosno, and he's a recently capped Russian international. And actually, I think he's a better all-round player. And, you know, now they've brought in yet another striker. They already have Dmitry Polos, they have Sebastian Drusi, they have Emiliano Rigoni, they have Oleg Shatov, they have just such an embarrassment of attacking riches that the numbers just don't add up, and Zuba looks like he's going to be the fall guy. Actually, I think that's a benefit to the Russian national team, because he limits the style of play. He's a very tall, very physical target man, and he can do a job in that role, but it means other players have to feed him. Whereas when he's not in the side, and Smolov, who will undoubtedly lead the line, he's the form Russian player at the moment, and there's been links of him moving away for some time now. He'll lead the line. Kokorin will be supporting or maybe even alongside him. And then Alexei Medanchuk, who's probably the best, he's the best Russian young player, only 22 years of age, he'll be in one of the attacking roles as well. And there are plenty of options to support them too. You know, you've got at CSKA Moscow, you've got Alexander Golovin, who's a fantastic central midfielder, really, really good, mature control of the ball, keeps the pace of the game flowing well, really incisive passing. Alan Zagoev, who's very experienced, been in the Russian national team for some time. Denis Glushikov, most likely to be named captain in the middle. So there's a really strong core there, and I just don't see a place for Zuba. But actually, I think that's for the best.
Andrew, I just want to jump in real quick and also talk about Russia and essentially, you know, the expectations of them as the host. Obviously, you look at history, you know, the host nation at a World Cup, be it a powerful side like a Brazil or a France or a newcomer side that we've seen recently, like a Japan or South Korea, defy expectations and go very far. You know, I'm just looking at the numbers here real quick of host nations who have their performance in the World Cup. 6 times champions, 2 times runners-up, 3 times third place, 2 times fourth place, 4 quarterfinal appearances, 1 second round appearance, 2 round of 16 appearances, and only one team failed to get out of the group stage, and that was South Africa in 2010. You know, for all that Russia has been known historically, be it when they were the Soviet Union or even now, even with this so-called golden generation of players, you know, do you think that Russia has the team to be one of those surprise sides heading into this World Cup and follow that tradition of host countries? Or do you think that they, with the other teams being much more stronger in the world nowadays, that they have a lot to improve and they could indeed fall flat on their face in their group?
Well, I actually think that they really could be one of the surprise packages. I think one of the advantages they have is that there is very low expectation. I mean, I'm an Englishman and I've grown up on a diet of over exuberance at tournaments, expectation going way out of control. And in Russia, it's the complete opposite. There really is none. And I think that will be an advantage. You don't want to have too much pressure piled on, and as a host nation, there will inevitably be that, but it won't be quite to the extent of Brazil or England if they were to host a major tournament. And the group itself, I mean, Saudi Arabia, I would argue, probably the weakest side in the finals. Egypt have some dangerous players like Mohamed Salah, of course, and some players who have European experience, but I still expect Russia to beat them. And even Uruguay, I mean, Uruguay's obviously a historic World Cup nation, but a lot of their squad is aging now, and I don't think they're going to be the side that we saw certainly 4 years ago. And I think realistically, Russia should be looking to win that group. The Uruguay game, the last match day, that'll be crucial. I mean, from there on, it actually does get quite difficult because it's most likely going to be Spain or Portugal in the next round, and that will be very difficult. But you never know. So, I expect Russia to get out of the group stage. But how much further? Anywhere beyond the first knockout round is a major, major bonus. I expect them to get through the group, and if they make quarterfinals, I'd be delighted.
Right, Andrew, I want to jump back in and ask a goalkeeper question. I know we've talked about Igor Akinfeev plenty of times now. He's starting to get up there, I guess, in age a little bit. Certainly for me, has been throughout his career an above-average goalkeeper, but is always, you know, traditionally giving you a howler or two here or there over his career. At 31 years of age, looking at the rest of the goalkeepers that Russia has to choose from, there's nobody getting really any younger. I do see Andrei Lunyov, who was at 26 years of age, currently playing at Zenit, and we also have a couple of others. Who is the go-to goalkeeper if it's not going to be Akinfeev if something happens with him?
Well, actually, you know, that's quite a good question, really. I guess at the moment, Lunyov is probably next in line. Interestingly, though, there are some young Russian goalkeepers who, for some reason, I don't understand why myself personally, but haven't really been given a lot of chances over the last couple of years. You've got Stanislav Kritsyuk, who at Krasnodar, he's been injured recently. Mm-hmm. I mean, he's not young, he's 27, but he is younger, at least. Right. And, you know, you've got... you've got players who have played abroad in Switzerland. In Switzerland, we've got names just escaped me for a moment, but we've got players who are certainly available. We've got Alexander Selikov at Spartak Moscow. He's in his mid 20s. He's got a lot of experience. Had a fantastic game against Liverpool in the Champions League. When Artem Rebrov, the senior goalkeeper at Spartak, was injured, Selikov came on, was absolutely brilliant in Moscow. So there are plenty of young goalkeepers who really should be coming through. One criticism I have of Cherchesov is he does tend to pick more experienced goalkeepers as backup keepers. Vladimir Gabalov has played a reasonable amount. Well, not played a amount. He's been in the squad a lot. But I don't see the point. He's in his mid-30s already, and he's certainly not getting any better. He just moved to Belgium, which is one of the most bizarre transfers I've seen in recent years involving Russian players. But go-to guy, I guess Lunyov, because he's playing at Zenit, and he's a good goalkeeper. He's solid. He's getting a lot of European experience. After that, I would say Alexander Selikov should be, and also likewise has a lot of experience too for a young keeper. So yeah, those are the ones I would say.
Yeah, Lunyov is 26 years of age, so would certainly be I would guess the heir apparent to Akinfeev once he does move on. Are there, in your opinion, are there any other players that we should be keeping an eye out for in this, you know, as a player to watch in this tournament? Anybody that can make a difference that we haven't talked about yet?
Well, I mean, of the people we haven't mentioned yet, I have picked out most of my favourite players, I guess, the one of the strongest ones. I guess maybe a less spectacular player, and I'm not sure he'll start, but he may well play a part as a squad player, is Dalay Kuzyaev, who is, he joined Zenit St. Petersburg this season. And before this season, he'd not really made much of an impact on Russian football, but he's got spectacular long-range shooting, and he can play as a holding midfielder. I even feel he can play as a box-to-box player. He's got really good passing. He doesn't just pass sideways and recycle possession. He makes things happen. And he has kept out some very experienced international players from that side at Zenit. So... Kuzayev may well have a say. He probably won't be first choice, like I say, if everybody's fit, but I think he will be used at some point. Fyodor Smolov is the guy to look out for. Alexei Miranchuk is on form. Those two are the real bright sparks. But yeah, I mean, there are plenty of lights, but the ones we hadn't mentioned, Kuziaev, I would say.
I'm going to now look at the nitty-gritty and, of course, the group that they're in. They're in Group A with a relatively hard, easy group. You know, it's hard to say, I guess, depending on what side you're on. But, you know, Russia, the host, they open in Moscow against Saudi Arabia in what really does not seem to be an entertaining opening match in the history of these World Cups. They play on the 14th, then they play Egypt on the 19th, and then they finish it off with Uruguay in Samara on the 25th. So, Andrew, I just want to jump to you first. Obviously, you know, three important games for Russia, obviously three hard games for Russia, but if you had to pick one that you probably think will be the most important one, what is it?
Well, I guess it depends on what your precise ambitions are. If it's just simply to qualify, regardless of winning the group or not, then the second game against Egypt probably, that will settle the nerves, that one. And, you know, in St. Petersburg, the Krestovsky Stadium is a massive arena. It's a spectacular venue, and it really does build the atmosphere phenomenally. Depending on the weather, the roof may even be shut, but in summer, it'll be really hot. And that's actually one little factor a lot of people will overlook about Russia. It's going to be scorching hot in most of the venues in the summer. So, you know, the first game against Saudi Arabia, I mean, you don't want to be arrogant, but if you can't expect to beat Saudi Arabia at home, then you really don't deserve to be hosting the World Cup. I mean, it sounds disrespectful, it probably is, but, you know, I mean, come on, we really have got to set our sights a bit higher than that. So I guess the Egypt game, really, depending on the other results, like whether Uruguay drop points against Egypt in their first round, it might lessen the pressure on that last game against Uruguay. Yeah, I'll go ahead and say the Egypt game, because if we win that, then that will affect seal progression, and then we can relax for the last group game, perhaps rotate a few players, keep us fresh. So, yeah, I'd say the Egypt game, probably the most important one.
Yeah, I'll pose that same question to you, Joe. You know, do you agree with Andrew, or do you think that the opening game against Saudi Arabia, or even the, I guess, probably the toughest game against Uruguay would be considered the most important or the hardest? What do you think, Joe?
No, I think Andrew's spot on here. I mean, I know going into that second, you know, if they do qualify and manage to sneak by either Uruguay or Egypt, that they're going to be facing either a Spain or Portugal side, and which is not actually inviting, let's say. But yeah, they've got to get by either the Egypt or Uruguay part of this. And, you know, you look at Mo Salah currently playing at Liverpool on incredible form. You wonder if he's going to be able to keep that up through the season and then carry it into the World Cup. I mean, the guy's a national hero at this point. You look at Uruguay, and they've got Cavani, they've got Suarez, you know, they've got so much power, you know, both offensively and defensively. I think you have to circle that Egypt match. And actually, like Andrew even alluded to even further, you have to beat Saudi Arabia. You know, if you don't beat Saudi Arabia at home to open the tournament, you're in big trouble. I mean, you're in huge trouble. So that should go without saying. And you actually hope, like Andrew said, that Egypt and Uruguay maybe drop some points there, maybe play to a draw, and you start out on the right foot on the first 3 points. And then it lessens the pressure against Egypt. You might be able to sneak in with a draw against Egypt. But I think that Egypt match, I think at that point you want to qualify at that point. You want to have everything locked up so that when you do get to that Uruguay match, you don't need the match and you don't have to chase the match. Otherwise, it becomes a much, much bigger task to qualify there. So I think that Russia-Egypt match on the 19th of June is going to be the big one for them.
Absolutely. I think that one is going to really figure out how that group will end up as we know it. So I'll just bump back to you again, Andrew. And obviously, you know, they do have a few friendlies to play before they open up their World Cup. They play Brazil on the 23rd, then they play France on the 27th of March. You know, I just want to give you the question about, you know, what are we supposed to expect of this Russia team? You know, I think for a lot of people who don't know this Russia side or haven't seen much of them in either friendlies or maybe not even in the Confederations Cup closely, you know, what do we expect from this Russia side, you know, about how they play or, you know, strength or weaknesses? You know, what should we know about this Russia side that we should definitely keep an eye out for heading into this World Cup?
Well, I mean, first and foremost, they will most likely play three at the back, three defenders, and it will suit their style because there are some good central midfielders, but there aren't many natural out-and-out wingers. Alexander Samedov is about the only natural winger that's near the squad. Yuri Zhirkov nowadays plays as a fullback, so they won't play with wingers. But what they will do is they will play with Konstantin Rausch, who has been given his, well, he is a Russian citizen, he's an international now, but he only just gained his citizenship recently. He will play, I expect, on the left, and on the right, most likely Mario Fernandez, who's absolutely fabulous going forwards. He's almost a winger in himself, but he plays as a fullback or wingback for CSKA Moscow. So I expect those two. I expect those two to be the wingbacks, and then in the middle, you're going to have a really, really strong core. This is where the strength of the Russian side lies, in my opinion, because you know you've got the fabulous talents of Alexander Kokorin and Fyodor Smolov up front, but the strength comes from Denis Glushkov, is a box-to-box midfielder, Spartak Moscow, won the title with them last season, and actually the trouble is going to be fitting the talented players in. Against Uruguay, perhaps he may go one man up front and have Denis Glushkov, Alexander Golovin, Alexei Miranchuk, and possibly Dalia Kozaev in that game. And you know the sort of style of play depends on the players in there. But if Miranchuk is playing and if Golovin are playing, you'll see a lot of Intorin and Smolov. Pardon me, sorry. But it will be mostly it's played through the middle. Not a lot goes out wide unless Mario Fernandez overlaps and gets crosses into the box. But we're not going to play with a big target man up front. It's be more with creativity through the middle and a lot of energetic midfielders in there. Glushkov is the glue that holds it together. So it's going to be an interesting style to watch, I think, and it comes down to the mentality. Do they have the composure? Will they let their nerves get the better of them, or will they be calm and controlled and composed? If they can do that, then they really can shock a lot of people, I think.
Now, Andrew, to close out, I have two more questions that I want to ask you, and I'm going to ask them both at the same time. One, what would a World Cup title mean to the people of Russia? And two, in this particular tournament, what would be considered a success for this team?
Well, I mean, a World Cup win would be people would be stunned. They probably wouldn't even know how to react. You know, titles in, you know, world championships at hockey, that's something that they demand, they expect, they want. But football, it would just be stunned is really the thing I can think of. It would be really, I think what would make more difference to the Russian people, and not more difference in if they won the title, but success at staging the tournament successfully, showing people what Russia, the country, really is like, that it's not linked directly to what the politicians may or may not say, what goes on behind the scenes, you know, with the allegations of doping and all that. The attitudes of the Russian people need a stage to be shown, and this is obviously the best opportunity for it. And I think that's what would mean the most to people. Like I said earlier, Russian people, they want to know what foreign people think of them. And if they can leave a positive impression, you know, surprise people by the hospitality, by, you know, how secure the country is, the standard of the transport, of all this, I think that will probably mean more to the people than anything else. And in a way, I mean, we all love football. We want to win titles, but that in the long term is probably a better legacy to leave. I mean, a World Cup win, Christ knows, it'll be so unthinkable. I just don't even know what the reaction would be.
I would say there'd be a couple of days of celebrating, I would say, that, you know, at minimum. but you're right, in such a hockey-rich country, to win, not that they can't, let's say, but to do something so unexpected, I think would be it would be seismic. Not only in Russian football, but I think in world football as well, it would certainly be something to that level. So, Andrew, I do want to thank you for joining us tonight and helping us break down the Russian Football Federation and the Russian national team as they embark on hosting the 2018 World Cup. And as always, we look forward to, you know, to reading your reports on them as well. So for Mr. Roberto Rojas and for Andrew Flint, this is Joe Uccello for This Week in Football from the makers of Low Limit Football on the All In Sports Talk Network. Thank you for listening tonight, and good night.